Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph, 8 lines down. The Gemara here continuing to discuss the machlok between Rabbo and Rovo with regards to siman asui lidares, a siman that can be trampled or ruined when it is trampled. The difference in their opinion that Rovo believes that it is considered to be a siman, whereas Rabbo believes that it is not considered to be a siman. So Tashma, so now Gemara tries to bring a proof. Ki karot shel nachtom. It's a case where you have bread that comes from the bakery. Harielu shalo, he can keep them. Hashel balabait, if it's homemade breads, then chayav lachriz. Then you have to announce it because of the fact that these are unique. When you're talking about a bakery, you're talking about generic commercial type of bread or bakings. When you're talking about a balabait, that's something unique to that individual and therefore it's identifiable. So balabait, my time up. What's the reason that the balabait's bread or baked goods, you make a announcement about them, you machrizen them? Came to eat behu siman, since they have some sort of siman in them. Mida yoda rifta de inishu, that the bread of a certain individual has the stamp of that individual on it. So people know you're baking, people know you have a particular style of baking, and it's not generic in any way. Again, the problem with commercial type of baking is, even if you can identify the bakery, it doesn't mean that you've identified the owner, because someone could have purchased it from that bakery. But with the balabayit, in all likelihood, it belongs to that particular individual. And therefore, if you can identify the individual, then you can give it back. And here it's the uniqueness of the baking or the uniqueness of the product that makes it is identifiable. Veloshna reshut harabim, veloshna reshut hayachid. It doesn't matter where you find these baked goods that belong to the balabayit, whether it's in the public domain or the private domain. No telemachris. So then you take them and you announce you're obligated to publicize the issue and see if you can find someone who identifies them. Alma, siman asui lidares, sabi siman. From this you would conclude that a siman that is trampled is considered to be a siman because this is applicable both in Reshut Rabim and Reshut Yachid. Reshut Yachid is not a lot of traffic, but in Reshut Rabim there's a tremendous amount of traffic. If that's the case, the likelihood is that this siman would have been trampled. That means that the owners would have been miyayesh. They would have given up hope of getting it back because they don't assume that the quote-unquote siman will remain intact, because they don't think the bread will remain intact. It's going to be trampled in Reshut Rabim. So this is very supportive of Rova's position that a siman that will get trampled, still the Balei Batim are somech on the fact that someone picked it up before it got trampled, and they're not miyayish. It's against, or it's a tiyuf to the Rabbo. It's a strong refutation of Rabba's position that Simana Suda Deres is not considered to be a Siman. Amar Lecha Rabba, so Rabba deals with that. Hotam Hainu Taimot, this is the reason over there. Mishum De'ein Ma'avirin Alochlim. People do not pass by food. Now, Raz Rashi notes over here, it's not that they don't pass by food, but rather, in Rashai Lavor Lehem, Ulanicham Sham. You do not have permission to pass by and leave them there. Because you know that if they remain there, that they are going to be ruined. And you have problems of Baal Tashchit. So therefore, people don't pass by food and leave it on the ground with the knowledge that it could be ruined. Or if you leave the food in this place, then it's not going to be there any longer. And we'll see in a second, there may be other individuals that might pick it up. And so in order to give it back to its rightful owner, plus the fact that it's food, we assume that people are going to pick it up right away. And so because of that, even Rabbo here will agree that this siman will not disappear, because the likelihood of it getting trampled are very low, because as soon as someone sees it, they're going to pick it up and not leave it in the location. The Gemara asks an interesting question. What about the fact that there are non-Jews? So the non-Jews don't have this imperative that they don't pass by the food and they pick it up, meaning that a Jew is charged with not allowing Baal Tashchit. Therefore, he feels obligated to pick it up and to ensure that the Ochel does not get ruined by the fact it's left on the ground. But the Nachri doesn't feel that way at all. And so the Nachri will pass by, leave it there, stomp on it, meaning that you don't know that the person who's going to reach it first is a Jew who's going to take it off the ground. So how can you be so sure that it's not going to be nidras? How do you know it's so sure that it's not going to be trampled underfoot? Nachrim chayshe l'kshafim. Nachrim worry about sorcery, witchcraft, and they worry about the fact that there's food that's left on the ground is not left there just unintentionally or accidentally, but rather intentionally placed there in order to cause people in the Reshut Rabim to trip up or to capture them under the spell of whatever's there. And since they have this superstitious side to them, they're not going to step on it because of the fear of the kshafim that are associated with it. They're going to step around it. Tosfot over here asks just separately, why does it even matter? Meaning that the Gemara here asks a question which seems to undermine the answer, which is that if Nachrim are there, we're afraid of the fact that they'll pick it up, they'll take it. Tosfot shows from other places in the Masechta that we don't worry about that even when they're the rove, because, and here's the bottom line that Tosfot says over here, which is, Aval ko'echa de'efshar l'takin la'ashiv mamon l'balim, ayidei achraza, mitakninan. Anytime we have an opportunity to return an object to its rightful owner, and there is a siman, or there's something there that could help us, we will put a takana in place in order to obligate the person to do this. Imkein, my parich hacha. He says, I don't understand what the Gemara is asking over here. Even if there's a minority of Jews in the town, and even though there are Nachrim there, and they are the majority, still there's a chance that a Jew picked it up and didn't trample on it, or it didn't get trampled. If that's the case, then we would still charge the individual being machriz, because there's this chance that you could get it back to its rightful owner. And that's really the objective here, is to get it back to its rightful owner. And so Tosfot says, I don't understand the Gemara's question. Even if you're right, and there are Nachrim, and Nachrim would trample it, why should that make a difference? You could argue here that the difference is that in the case where the person has hope of the right person picking it up and returning to them, so then we disregard the robe that they are Nachrim. But over here, where we're talking about the siman itself, which is the ability to return it, if the robe are Nachrim over there, then there's a likelihood that there is someone who has it that can actually return it is so low now because of the fact that the siman is more likely than not to get erased. And so then maybe the person there has Yeush. Even though in the case where the robe of the people there would not return an Aveda, and the minority would, we'd still give the person the quote-unquote benefit of the doubt, and he's going to assume that someone picked it up who would return it to him. That's in the case of when the siman is intact. But if the person believes the siman won't be intact, maybe they give up hope much earlier, or they don't have that consideration. Anyway, but Balei Tosfot just questioned the underlying assumption of the Gemara over here as to why this is a question. It says, Vayika Behema Viklavim. So what about the fact that you have animals and dogs? It's one thing when you're talking about human beings. Human beings make decisions. The Jew picks it up. The Nachri avoids it. But the animals are going to eat it or drag it off. Mar says, it's a place where there's not an active traffic of animals that are there, and therefore you're not worrying about it. The most likely person to come across this item will be a human being, and if it's a Jew, he's going to pick it up and get it back to you, because there is a siman in it. If it's a non-Jew, he's going to avoid it, because he's afraid of kshafim, and therefore, even according to Rabba, the siman will remain intact. Lema kitanae. Let us assume here that the machlok Rova and Rabba with regards to siman ha'esur lidareis is actually a machlok etanaim. The machlok etanaim based out of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kol davar sheyesh bo shinui chayav lachriz. Anything that has something different about it, unusual about it, then you have to be machriz, because that in and of itself is the siman. Keitzad, matzai gul b'tocho cheres. He finds a circle of pressed figs, and there is a shard of pottery inside of it. Kikaru b'tocho ma'ot. Or it's a loaf of bread, and it has money inside of it. So the understanding here is that this is something unusual, and if you announce that you found something, people will be able to identify it by this unusual feature. Michlau, from this you would assume that Tanakama savar elu shalo. That the Tanakhama disagrees and thinks that the person who found them can keep them. Savrua. The Gemara says, we will assume. Anytime the Gemara does that, you can assume that when the Gemara makes an assumption, the answer to the question is that the assumption is wrong. The Gemara will make a number of assumptions and then posit that this machloket is the machloket that we're looking for. Obviously, you can undermine that by taking away the assumptions that are made here. So, Savrua, the Kuliyama Siman Abameila Vave Siman. A Siman that happens by itself is considered to be a Siman. Umavirin al Ochlim. And people do pass by Ochel and don't pick it up. My love. And therefore, what is their machlok between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda? Bisiman Asudi Dereis Kamiflige. They're arguing about a Siman that will be trampled. Masav Elo Avi Siman. One of them holds the Tanakama that it's not considered to be a Siman. Masav Avi Siman. And the Rabbi Yehuda believes that it is still a siman, because here this item is found out in the Rishut Rabim. It could get trampled, and it will get trampled, because here we believe that Ochlim, people will pass by, or will leave it there, so it will get trampled. In addition, we believe that a siman haba me'elav is considered to be a siman. The way Rashi explains a siman haba me'elav is, it's ra'oi lavo me'elav. It's something that could happen by itself. You have a possibility here. There's a shard of pottery inside of the pressed figs. How did the shard of pottery get there? It could be that it fell. It just fell while he was pressing the figs, or in the location where they're pressing the figs, a shard of pottery fell in. Or it could be that it was placed there intentionally. So that's what Rashi says. A siman haba me'elav is a siman where it could happen both intentionally or unintentionally. Do we assume that it was done intentionally? Since it's something that could have happened unintentionally, then maybe we should consider it that it is intentional in this case. That's the way Rashi formulates it. On the other hand, the Tosafot suggests over here, Perish Rashi, It was placed there intentionally. Since when do people put money into a loaf of bread in order to be a siman? That does not seem to be the normal way to create a siman. I'm leaving aside the shlishol challah, which is supposedly some sort of sgula, which doesn't have a lot of basis. But nevertheless, most normal people aren't baking money into their loaves of challah as a siman that it's their loaf of challah. So Tosfot says he disagrees with Rashi, and he believes that a siman, shnafal me'elav, is literally that. It happened by itself. It happened unintentionally. The question is, does the owner know about it? It's not a question of, did he do it intentionally or unintentionally? Tosfot says, it happened unintentionally. The question now is the owner aware of the fact that it happened? Because otherwise, the siman is meaningless because the owner doesn't know it's there. And so that's what the question about siman abba me'elav is. So just a small machloket Rashi and Tosfot with regards to what siman abba me'elav is. But nevertheless, really? The Gemara seems here that maybe the machloket here revolves around the machloket of Rava and Rabo, which is that the machloket is about whether siman asudi dares is a siman or not a siman. So based on the assumptions that we made about their positions, one is that a siman abba me'elav have a siman, and number two is that mavirin ala ochlin, people will pass by ochlin, then you could suggest the machloket in the Mishnah between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda is the same machloket as Rava and Rabo. Some Rav Zvid Mishmei de Rava. Isa kadatka kadasavar tanakama siman asudi deres lo avi siman. If you are correct about your assumption here that the Tanakama's position is akin to Rava's position, that siman asudi deres is not a siman, umavirin ala ochlein, and people do pass by food and don't pick it up. Kikarocho balabait b'shut rabim amay machris. That when you find baked goods of a balabait in the reshut rabim, why do you have to make an announcement about it? It is, number one, a siman asuli dares. Number two is, it's a ochel, which people are mavir alav. That means in all likelihood, the siman's going to disappear. So why would you have to be machriz on it? The person has no hope of getting it back in that situation. El amar av zvid mishmei derava, tukuli ama savre, siman asuli dares, have a siman. Everybody believes that a siman that is trampled is a siman, which would be akin to Rava's position now. But, mavirin ala ochlin, and everybody believes you pass by food, and again, if you undermine one of the assumptions we made before, that becomes the machloket, and the machloket here is whether siman abba me'elav is considered to be a siman. The Tekana Kama Savar siman abba me'elav lo havi siman. It's not a siman. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda Savar have a siman, and therefore in the case of the shard of pottery in the dvela, or the coin inside of the kikar, whether you use Rashi or Tosafot's interpretation, the question is that a siman or not? According to Rashi, did the person put it there intentionally or not put it there intentionally? According to Bali Tosfot, is he aware of the fact that it fell there unintentionally? And that's a machloka. The Tanakam is saying no, that you don't have to worry about it. And Rabbi Yehuda is saying yes, that is a siman, and you have to announce based on that siman. So now Rabba obviously can't explain the Mishnah that way, because then it's Kuliyama is against him. So he says no, Kuliyama siman asuli deres, lo abi siman. Everybody in the Mishnah believes that if you have a trampled siman, that is not a good siman. Ve'ein mavirin ala ochleim, and people don't pass by food. So this will be his position here, is that people will always pick up food, they won't leave it on the ground. And they're arguing about a siman abba me'elav. Tanakama savar lo avi siman, it's not a siman. Rabbi Yehuda savar avi siman. Because over here, the siman will be preserved by the fact that it's not going to be nidras under regel. Why is it not going to be nidras? It's because people can pick it up. And that'll be the difference between Rova and Rabba's explanation of our Mishnah. They both think the Mishnah is their position, and they will bolster that by whether you are mavir ala ochlin or ain mavir ala ochlin. And then the machlok and the Mishnah, according to both of them, will be about siman abaye v'lav. Is siman abaye v'lav a siman or not a siman? Igadamre, some have this machloket in a different manner. Savrua, again, the underlying assumptions are the following. Dekuli alma siman abaye v'lav ave siman. Siman that happens by itself is a siman. V'siman asudi deres lo ave siman. And a siman that is trampled is not a siman. So again, this would be supportive of Rabba's position, and therefore establishing the Mishnah as Rabba's position, my love, this is the machloket here, mavirin ala ochlim kamiflege. They're arguing about mavirin ala ochlim, and that's what Rashi says over here, that when we, Ikadamri over here is saying that the Tanaei, the machloket Tanaim that we're looking for, is actually different. Before we said the Tanaei is the machloket Tanaim of our Mishnah is identical to the machloket Rovo and Rabba, with regards to siman asudi deres. That was what we tried to establish, that the Mishnah has the same machloket as Rava and Rabba. On the other hand here, what the Gemara is suggesting here is, Tanaei, when we said it's a machloket Tanaim, is that whether you're mavir al-ochlim or not is a machloket Tanaim. Here Rabba says that siman has suli deres, is not a siman. So the only way for him to come up with scenarios where it is considered to be a siman is a situation where people won't trample it. That's a case where in mavirin alochlim, people don't pass by food and leave it there. So that's how Rava solved the problem. The Gemara comes along and says, Tanaehi. That's a machloket Tanaim as to whether people do pass by food or don't pass by food. Because based on our Mishnah, explaining it in Rabba's position, where the Mishnah's assumption is, number one, siman asudi deres is not a good siman. Number two is, siman abba meilav, that comes by itself, is a good siman. And now the machloket between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda is the following, whether you're mavir al ochlim, the marsava mavirin, that people do mavir al ochlim, that's the Tanakhama, and therefore it's not a siman, by the case of the dvela and the bread. Whereas Marsav Rav Yehuda says, "Ein mavirin al ochlim, people don't pass by food, and therefore the bread or the dvela remains as a siman." So Amar Rav Zvid Mishmei Derova, Isak Adat Chasavar Tanakama Siman Asudi Dareis Lo Avi Siman. Here Rav Zvid, in the name of Rova, asked the same question he asked before, denying the fact that the Mishnah could have this machloket Tanaim, is that if you believe that Siman Asudi Dareis is not a good siman, Umavirin al ochlim, and you're telling me now that the Tanakama believes that people trample food, kikarocha balabait, b'shuta rabim, amay makriz. Again, the loaves or baked goods of the balabait that are found in shuta rabim, what are you announcing? Here, number one, it's a siman asudi deres. People are going to trample on it. Number two is people don't pick up food. That means it will get trampled. And therefore, what is there to announce? Yes, kikarei balabait are identifiable, but that's when they still look like the kikarot balabait. They're going to get trampled. They're not going to look like kikarot balabait, or they're going to be kicked around. Whatever it is, there's no more siman left. So again, here we're going to back away from the assumptions and say, Sabri, siman asudi deres, ave siman. Obviously, this is Rava's position, so he's going to say everybody in the Mishnah believes that a siman that will be trampled is still classified as a siman. Umavirin al ochlim, and people do walk by food and don't pick it up. And again, he's saying similar to what he said in the previous version of this, that the machloket in the Mishnah is about a siman that happens by itself. The Tanakama savar siman abba meilav lo havi siman. It's not a siman. Rabbi Yehuda savar havi siman. V'rabba amar locha. Rabba obviously can't accept this because then the whole Mishnah is against his position. T'kul yama siman asudi deres lo havi siman. He says that everybody agrees that a siman that will be trampled is not considered to be siman. Vein marvirin al ochlin. And people don't pass by food. So therefore, if they don't pass by food, even though normally it would have gotten trampled, food is an exception to the rule because it won't get trampled. And therefore they're arguing about the siman b'me'elav because the siman here will remain intact because of the fact that it won't get trampled because it's food and people pick up food. So the machlok between them is this siman b'me'elav. The Tanakama serves siman b'me'elav lo abi siman. Siman that happens by itself is not considered to be a siman. Again, for Rashi, that means that people don't put things there intentionally in this manner. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda Savar, have a siman, that people do put it there in this manner, in this way intentionally, and therefore you can consider it a siman. Or going to Balei Tosafot, the Tanakama believes that people are not aware of these types of simanim, and Rabbi Yehuda believes that people are aware of these types of simanim, even though they happened by themselves. It's an Amar of Zvin Mishmei Derava, Klalala Davita. This is something we probably wanted to know at the beginning of this parak. It happens to be that Rashi quotes it. That's the gadlut of Rashi, is that he helps you know this information that's further on, and that's what he did over there, which is, this is the rule of an Aveda. Kevin demar vaila lechisaron kis. If he says, whoa, it's enough loss to me, miyayish lemina. That is giving up hope of recovery. Once the person has accepted the loss, then that is what is considered to be yayush. He says, it's enough. The loss is enough. I gotta live with the loss. Or it's enough looking for it, or expending money to go after it. That's it, I'm done. I've given up hope of getting it back. That's considered to be Yeyush, and that's exactly what Rashi quoted on the Mishnah. Rashi says, that's the definition of Yeyush, things that people give up hope of ever getting them back, or they say enough with this loss that there is. Number two is, Rav Rav Zvin Mishmei Derova, here is something that's a little more a psak halacha that references his own position, which is, Rav Zvin says, the name of Rava Yochata, krichot b'shut rabim. You find these bundles or these piles in b'shut rabim, harielu shalo, he can keep them. B'shut yachid, if it's in the private domain, iderach nefila, if they are distributed in a way that looks like they fell, not that they were placed there intentionally, harielu shalo, they're his, because then there's no way to identify them. Remember, these krichot in Rishut Rabim have no siman, because these are generic types of grains or items that are falling, so therefore there's no siman. The only siman is the makom, is the location or the place. So now, if they are in the Reshut HaRabim, they're his, because the location is not going to be meaningful, because it's going to get kicked around, it's going to get moved, in Reshut or picked up by people. There's just no way that the makom could be a siman. On the other hand, in Reshut HaYachid, it could be a siman, but it depends how they fell. If they fell unintentionally, then the makom is no longer going to be a siman, because the person has no idea where they fell. So if you're asking for him to give a siman, and you're asking him to give the location, he doesn't know. Iderech hanacha, if it was placed down, then no telemachliz. Then you take them and you announce it, because there was clearly intentionally placed there, and therefore, when you ask or you make an announcement about it, you can get the information back about the makom. V'zeh v'zeh b'davar she'im bo siman. This is clearly with something that does not have a siman in it. Now remember, this goes back to the machloka we saw between Rashi and Tosfot yesterday about makom. Whether you announce the item and the person has to identify the location for you, or do you announce the location and the person has to identify the aveda for you. We saw that machloka Rashi and Tosfot in yesterday's daf. Rashi says, you announce the location and the person has to identify the aveda, and Tosfot says, no, you announce the aveda and the person has to identify the location. That's only if it doesn't have a siman. Abu davar sheyesh bo siman, something that has a siman in it, lo shna b'shut rabim, lo shna b'shut yachid. Doesn't matter if it's in the public domain, private domain, ben b'derech nefila, ben b'derech hanacha, whether it was dropped or put down, chayav lachriz, there you have to be machriz, because there it is something that the Baal Bayit assumes he will get back. Now, he assumes he get it back in Reshut HaYachid because it has a siman. Doesn't matter if he placed it there or he dropped it there. In Reshut HaRabim, then if he placed it there intentionally, then most likely it's in a place that it won't get trampled. But even if it's dropped in a place where it could get trampled, this is Rova, the Shitato, who says, siman asudi deres, have a siman. And that's what I said before, that this is Rav Zvid Mishmei de Rova. Here's the halacha. The halacha is like Rova, which is that siman asudi deres is a siman. And therefore, even there's a siman there, you have to announce it, even though it's in the public domain in a place or a location where it could get trampled. All right, now we move on to the next piece of the Mishnah. Machuzot shel dagim, when it comes to strings of fish. Amai, why don't you have to announce this? Why is it shelo? Lahave kesher siman. Why isn't the way they are knotted on the string a siman? Everybody has their own individual knot or way that they tie them on the string. So why isn't that in itself a siman? It says, bekatra d'tzaido. It is the hunter's knot. Or in other words, it's the fisherman's knot, which is everybody uses. It's a generic commercial knot that everybody uses, and therefore it's not identifiable anymore, or doesn't give you any information about the string of fish. The Gemara says, tukuliyame hachim mekatra. Everybody ties it this way, and it's not identifiable. If it is identifiable, then we'll get to this later, is kesher a siman or not, but that would be more likely to be a siman if it was identifiable in some way. Lavi minyan siman. Why don't you say that the number of fish on the string is a siman? Because number should be a siman. Binyano dishavin. It's a standard lot of fish. Just like eggs are sold in the dozen, fish were sold in certain multiples over there, are strung in certain multiples, and therefore there's no way to identify by number because it's too generic. Everybody strings that number of fish on a string, and so it's not identifiable. They asked the Rav Sheshit, is the number a siman? The Gemara before took it as a granted that if you knew the number and it was identifiable through the number, that would be a siman. Now you're the students querying Rav Sheshit and saying, is that really true? Is a minyan a siman or not? I'm the Rav Sheshit, tinitua. It's a Tanaic work. Matzah klei kesef u klei nechoshet gistaron shel avar. If he found a silver utensils, copper utensils, or it seems to be here that it's shards or pieces of lead, v'chol klei matechot, or any type of metallic utensil, herzelo yachzir et yitain ot, you don't return unless he gives you a specific siman in the item. Oh, actually, kavein mishkalotav, or it can tell you the exact weight of the item, because that's how these types of items, when you're talking about precious metals, the way they're sold is sold by weight. So the person would know the weight of the item, and therefore that'd be an identifying character trait of the item. Umin mishkal avisiman, if weight is a siman, mida uminyan avisiman, then certainly measurements, meaning that length, width, height, and number would be a siman. So Gemara takes that for granted that, well, if weight works, then certainly these other things work. Tosafot already questions that from the Gemara upcoming in Kavchet, which says that if you have bigadim, if you have clothing, and two people give you the measurements of the clothing, one person gives you the weight of the clothing, and one person gives you the sizing, the length and width of the clothing. There, the Gemara says we favor the person who gives you the weight of the clothing. So you see that weight is a better identifying character trait than measurements or minyan and the number. If that's the case, how can you make a kal v'chomer that Rav Sheshit is making? Well, if weight works, then certainly these other items work. The Gemara later on says weight is a better identifying character trait. So Tosfot over here points out that there it's a different thing. Because by clothing, the more likely measurement to know is the length, the height, whatever the width. That's a natural way to know. Anybody who knows the weight of the clothing, that's something that they should not know. And if they know that, that's such an identifying feature that we would favor them, because why would they know that information? Who would know the weight of a piece of clothing? The only way you would know that is if you're really intimate with the object or you had spent time with it. And therefore, that's why it's a stronger identifying character trait there by clothing. That doesn't mean in general that that's the case. It happens to be in a situation like eggs. If you have a dozen eggs, then the number is not an identifying feature because everybody knows that there's a dozen eggs in a sold package. But if you know the weight of the package, people don't normally weigh the eggs when they sell them in that way. Right. V'chatichot shel basar, when you talk about pieces of meat that are cut. Amai, ave mishkala siman. Well, now that you said that weight is a siman, why don't you say that the weight of the meat should be the identifying feature? You lost the meat, and now there's a weight factor, so why don't you identify it through the weight? Well, it's a kilo and a half, it's 2 kilos, whatever it is. Mishkala deshavin. Again, there's a standard weight that is sold. So you're talking about packaged meat where there's a standard weight for all the packages, and therefore there's no identifying feature in the weight of the meat. V'davi haticha gufa siman. Why don't you say that the cut itself is the siman? O the dafka, o the atma. Whether it is, the atma is the thigh, the otem is the thigh. O the dafka, the way Rashi translates over here, he uses the term flanken. Dafka, flanken, makom shedofek, shehu yageya. It's a place where the pulsates or something happens when it tires over there. So that's the section with the flank of the animal, which I guess it's the tiredness is identifiable there. That's what it sounds like from Rashi, which could reference the neck, or otherwise possibly the side of the animal. So Gemara says it's helpful, but it's not totally helpful. You have to say that the identifying cut is more than simply the cut of meat of where it came from in the animal, because that would be true of any. Every animal has those features in it, and you can have that cut from it. So it has to be something a little more than that, but something identified through the cut. Milo Tanya, don't we have a braita? Matzachi tichot dagim, dag nashuch. If he finds pieces of cut fish, or a bitten fish, I mean, that's the siman in it, that has a bite taken out of it. Chayav lachris, you have to announce it. Chaviot shel yayin v'shel shemen shel tvoa v'shel grogorot. If you have barrels full of wine, oil, grains, figs, v'shel zeitim, or olives, areil shelot, you get to keep them. So hacha mayeskina, b'deika simana b'pasko. Oh, there is an identifying feature in the cut. Kehad rabba barav huna, like rabba bar huna, mechatechle atlata karnata. He cuts it on a triangle, as you see in the picture in Rashi. Dekanami, diktani, dumi da dagnashuch. It makes sense that the bright is saying that because it's similar to a case of a fish that has a bite taken out of it. So, shmamino, that makes sense that you're talking about something that is an identifiable cut. And so that's the difference. Certain cuts are generic. Certain cuts are identifiable. So a cut of meat is not necessarily identifiable because all ribeye steaks and all breasts and all thighs look the same. I mean, they're not identical, but they look similar enough that that's not an identifying feature when you have a cut like that. But if the person cuts it in a certain way and always slices some piece off of it that makes it unique, that it's his type of cut, then you can use that as an identifying feature. Like, for instance, here, where you cut in triangles where nobody else cut in triangles. All right, now the Gemara says, Amamar. So now they're going to go back to this bright and say, wait, Chaviot shel yayin v'shel shemen v'shel tvoa v'shel grogorot. V'shel zeidim, all these barrels of these types of fruits or grains, or El Shaloi gets to keep them, but it's none. We have a Mishnah upcoming that says, Kadei Yayim v'kadei Shemen chayav lachris. You find barrels of wine, barrels of oil, you have to announce it. How come the Braita is saying you don't have to announce it? Amar Rav Zeira, Amar Rav, Matanitin birashum. Our Mishnah is talking about a case where it has an identifying seal. Michlal, the Braita bipatuach. The case of the Braita must be where it's not sealed at all, it's open. Ibe batuach, if you find them open or unsealed, aveda midati. That's intentionally losing it or giving up ownership of it. So now, Rashi explains the process here. Balabatim used to make their wine. And that's a local farmer or a person who owns the vineyard. He makes barrels and barrels of wine, and he puts them away for the winter in order for them to ferment and for them to develop into wine. Then at the selling season, when it came about, they used to open up the barrels, and the chenvani, the storekeeper, used to taste them to see whether he wanted to take them. He thought they were good or good quality. He used to taste them, so they opened them up. Then they would reseal them. So now the balabayit, Tosfos notes this, is that the balabayit would reseal them. When the balabayit resealed it, he has a unique type of way that he reseals it. And that's identifiable. I mean, that seal is identifiable. So what the Gemara is saying is, okay, the difference between the case in the Mishnah is a case where the balabayit resealed it, because now you have an identifying mark in the barrel. But that means the bright is a case where he did not reseal it. Now, if he doesn't reseal it, that means that the wine is exposed to the elements now. And that means that if you find a barrel of wine that's open out in the public domain, just left there, that's the equivalent of a Aveda Midat. Somebody must have thrown that out. Because if you leave it that way, there's no chance you're getting it back in good condition. Bugs, animals, things will get in there that will ruin the wine. So it's clear that's an Aveda Midat. So then why do I need a Braita to tell me that you don't have to return in that case? So Amar Rav Hoshaya b'Metziv. It's not a case where he left it open, but rather he covered it without sealing it. So the Mishnah is a case where the Baal Bayit sealed it, so therefore there is a Siman. On the other hand, the case in the Braita is a case where he covered it without sealing it. So therefore, it's not a Veda Midat, because it's covered. It's not going to get ruined. It is covered. But you're missing the identifying feature, which is the seal, because the cover itself is not an identifying feature, and therefore you can't be machriz, because there's no siman to be machriz about. Now, obviously, this assumes that the barrels are generic barrels or utensils that are bought on the market, and not the particular wineries, barrels, or particular farmers' utensils, which should also be an identifying mark. Abaye says, Afilu teima idi v'idi brashum. Both cases are a case where the balabayit resealed the barrels. Lokasha, kan kodim sheniftuchu atzrot, kan achar sheniftuchu atzrot. Depends whether the people have opened up the wine cellars, have they opened up the wine storage at that point in time. Now, if they've opened it up at that point in time, that's what Rashi notes over here, that in that case, since it's just one guy who has it, then that type of resealing is an identifiable mark because nobody else has that mark. Why does nobody else have that mark? Because nobody else has brought their wine out yet. So since he's the only one who's brought his wine out, it's unusual to have barrels out there with the seal or the reseal on it. And that means that you can use that as a siman. But once the otzarot are open, then everybody has this resealing done to it. And it's not identifiable anymore. So Tosafot disagrees with Rashi and asks your question, because the way that I explained it before was based on the Balei Tosafot, that each individual Balabayit has his own seal. So Tosafot says, I don't understand Rashi, and I don't think he's right about this. The difference is not bad whether they opened up the cellars and the wine cellars, everybody's selling their wine or not. The difference has to be with whether, when the person sold it, he sold it to one retail buyer, or did he sell it to multiple buyers. The problem is that if he sold it to one store, then it's identifiable, it's a siman, his seal. But if he sells it to multiple stores already, then his seal is not meaningful anymore because he reseals it for multiple stores. So that's the difference. If he just took it out for one individual, then it's a siman because only that individual has his seal. On the other hand, if they opened up the sellers and they've sold to everybody now, then his seal is found all over the place with multiple people, and there it's no longer a siman. Kiyadar of Yaakov Ba'abo, Ashka Chavita de Chamra, like this scenario of Rakabab, he found this barrel of wine. La'achar sheniftuchu atzrot. After already all those cellars were opened up and everything was being sold in the market, Atel Kamid de Abaye, he brought it for Abaye to say, what do I do with this? Samalei, zil shkol nanafshech, it's yours to keep. There's no way now to find the owner of this item. It's no longer identifiable. You can take it home with you. Okay, Barmine Rabibi Mirav Nachman. So Rabibi now queried of Rav Nachman, Makom Abisiman or Lo Abisiman? So again, something that we took for granted before in the Gemara, which was actually a Machloket Rova and Rabba, is there a Makom Asiman or not? Here you have Rav Nachman speaking about this issue. Is it a Siman or not? Amalei Tinitua. We have it in a Tanaic work. Matzah Chaviyot Shel Yayim Shel Shemen Shel Tvav Shel Gorgorot Veshel Zeitim Arei Shelo. V'Yisagadatcha Makom Abisiman. If you think the location is a Siman, Lichro is Makom. There's no Siman in the barrel itself or in the object itself. But why isn't the location itself the siman? Amrav Zvid, Achamayiskinan, Birakto Dinaro. It's in the port, which is that it's a place along the river where they unloaded the goods from the boats. So if you find it there, location is no longer an identifying factor because you can find a barrel could be left here a week ago, could be left here today, meaning people are always unloading items there. He says, oh, where'd you find the barrel of wine? Oh, yeah, yeah, it was at the port. If you guess that, that's not an identifying location because everybody's barrels end up at the port at some point in time. Rav Nachman tried to bring a proof from the Braita that Makom is not meaningful. Gemara says this doesn't have to be true. The Makom and the Braita could be a situation or a scenario where the Makom is so generic that it doesn't help you because it's not an identifying feature because everybody's barrels pass through there. So that doesn't mean you can bring a proof from that. Amar Rav Mari, my time Amar Rabban and Rakta Denara lo havi siman. Why is the fact that the unloading location on the dock, why is that a siman? Mean that you might be right that you left your barrel there, but the next guy who unloaded might have left the barrel there as well. Who says you're the only person who left the barrel at the unloading dock? Somebody else could have done that, and therefore it's not clear that your identifying of the location is a siman in and of itself. Igadamre, Amar Rav Mari, my time Amru Rabban Makom lo havi siman. Why is it that the Rabbanan say that Makom is not a siman? That you could say this even more generically. Why do we say Makom is not a siman? It's because you can always assume, just like you dropped your whatever it is in this particular location, someone else did the exact same thing and dropped in that location. Now again, when you're dealing with the unloading dock, there it's much more likely that that would happen. But here, the Ikadamri says it generically, meaning that anytime you talk about location, location is not an identifying feature because, say, you left your bread or loaf of bread on the corner, someone else could have just as easily left their bread on the corner. And therefore, that's not an identifying feature. That's the Igadamri, which is a much stricter view then of saying that Makom is not a siman anywhere because you can always say to the guy, you're not the only guy who loses things, and you're not the only guy who loses things right here. Somebody dropped their wallet there, someone else could have dropped their wallet there if it's not an identifying feature in the wallet. How do you know it's your wallet? Somebody else could have dropped their wallet there as well. How Gavra? Dashka Kufra Beimet Artzarto. He found pitch in the Beit Chabad, in the olive press. I'm assuming the pitch is there in order to make them or seal the olive press so it doesn't leak. But they found, Kufra, he found it left there, but in a time period when the presses were not active. Atala Kameh Rav. He came before Rav to say, what do I do with this? Do I have to return it? What do I do with this? Amalei Zil Shakol Nafshech. You can keep it for yourself. It's yours. Chazia to have a kamechasim. From the word lo tachsom shor b'disho means to hold back. He was reluctant to listen to Rav in this situation because he wasn't so comfortable that it was really lost and not left there intentionally, or that there could be a siman to identify it. Amalei Zil Plogle L'Chiyabri. So what Rav says to him in order to make him really comfortable, he says, go split it with my son. That if you have a Rav that paskins on something, he says, yeah, it's kosher. If he eats it, then you know that he really believes that it's kosher. So the same thing here. He's telling him, he's giving him a psak halacha, and now the guy is hesitant to accept the psak halacha. So he tells him, I'm telling you that this is a psak halacha, go split it with my son. Because then he's saying to him, look, I'm willing to take this. I don't think it's theft here. So that should give him ease in this. So he says, lemekasava Rav makom lavi siman. From this, and that's probably why the guy hesitated, it sounds like from Rav over here, that the location is not a siman, because a person could identify the pitch by the location, by the press, by the olive press by which it was located. So why doesn't Rav say, be machriz, and then whether you machriz the makom or you machriz the item, and someone could identify it. So Rava mishum yeush balim naguba. No, this is a case where there was definitely yeush balim, because the chazad the kadachi bei chalfik, that he saw that there was already mold or characteristics of aging in the pitch, which means that it was there for a long duration. This was not left there recently. This was left there a long time ago. So he says that that's already something that the Balim gave up hope of recovering, or not even thinking of recovering, because it's too far away. The duration is too long for a person now to come back and say, oh, I left my pitch here, because it already has features that make it look like it's been there for a long period of time. Right, it could be an aveda midat at that point, because the person either intentionally left it there, or if they unintentionally left there, they already have given up hope of recovering it because it's been there for so long. Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer, kol klei amporia in chayev lachriz. That's what the Mishnah says. Any klei amporia, you do not have to announce about them. Now, Gemara wants to know, my amporia. What is this word amporia that's used in the Mishnah? Right, we need to know the information. We need more information about it. So, Amar Yehuda Mashmo, kelim chadashim. These are brand new utensils. Shlo sabatana ayin. Before a person has had time to become familiar with the item. Hey, chidami, what exactly is the scenario? Eat behu siman. If they have a siman, kilo sabatana ayin my hobby. Even if you haven't had time to become familiar with the item, it doesn't matter. A siman is something that stands out. You're going to know that siman right away. Idol eat behu siman. If it doesn't have a siman, kisavatana ayin my hobby. if you don't have a siman, then even if you have spent time with it and you know the product well, why does that help you? That's not a way to get an object back, meaning that just because you say, ah, I know that that's mine, that's not enough of a reason to allow you to get it back, because the person has to give a siman in order to get it back. Where it says, olam delepehu siman. It's a case where there is new siman. Nafkamino? What's a nafkamino? Is la dure le tsuber mirabonon. We saw this earlier. To return it to a young Talmud Chacham, to a Talmud Chacham, bitzviot eina. With just him saying, I know it's mine. We saw that before. So that's a story that we saw before by Rabbi Barbarchana, who brought this issue up. That tviat ayin for a tsuber mirabonon is a way that they can get it back. Meaning that this is not for everybody. It's only true of a Talmud Chacham. If he has that status, and we'll see in a second what it means to have that status of a Talmud Chacham. But if you have that status, then if you can just say by identifying the object, I know, I'm familiar with this object, that's enough for you to get it back, even though there's no siman in the object itself. Savatan ayin. So therefore, if he's had it for enough time, and he's had a time to become familiar with it, kimle begavayu, umadrinale. He definitely knows the object, and we would give it back to him. If it's so brand new that he hasn't spent enough time with it, then it's no way that he's going to have a knowledge or recognition of the item. Therefore, we don't return it to him. There are three things that Talmidei Chachamim lie about. Masechet, Puriyah, Ubeushpiza. That these three items that people lie about. The first of which is Masechet. Rashi over here says that Masechet is Yesh biyadcha Masechet Ploni Stura. Did you learn this Masechet? Did you learn this Gemara? And there he can lie and say that I did not learn this Gemara because, as Rashi says, it's a Midah of Anova. You don't have to tell everybody. You don't have to say, yeah, I learned Shas, I learned this, I learned that. That's a Midah of Anova, that you don't have to identify what you have learned. Tosfot seconds that. And he says, despite the fact that there is a requirement that Divrei Torah yu mechudadim beficha, that Divrei Torah have to be sharp, and that you have to know Divrei Torah and answer quickly, that's when someone asks you a halachic question, that you have to jump and answer the question. But that doesn't mean that you have to tell them what you know or what you learned. And that the truth is that the Rambam explains here, Masechet is, that if someone's coming to ask you a question, you can say, I don't know that Masechet, I don't know that issue, and you could say that I'm not ready to give a psak halacha about it. Right then, Puraya is the fact that the person or the individual doesn't have to say that he was together with his wife. Or that he doesn't have to disclose the fact that he slept on a particular bed because they might find something on the bed that would cause him embarrassment. And so therefore he doesn't have to admit to the fact that he actually slept on that particular bed. I mean that issues of tzniut, as Rashi says, he doesn't have to disclose information or give up information, whether it's because he's sleeping somewhere or with the neighbors, whatever it is that he doesn't have to give up that information. The last thing is Ushpiza, is his host. He doesn't have to give up the host. Rashi over here says that if the host hosted him well, he doesn't have to tell the truth and say yes. Or the way that the Balei Tosafot over here says that if there are people who are not good people and they're asking him about his host, he doesn't have to give up the information about it. So now the truth is that if he's in a place where people are good people, you have to tell the truth. And you have to give praise to the people that hosted you because of the fact that they did a tova for you, and you have to compliment them for doing you a tova. The risk that we're worried about here is that if people find out that this person's a great host and they get great food, people are going to become leeches, and they're going to start going to this person's house, and they're going to want to always be there or always be guests in his house, and they're going to take everything. They're going to drain him of all of his resources. So if a Talmud Chacham goes there and he compliments the host, then everybody's going to be chasing down this person to be in his house. So we don't want that. So Mar says, my nafkamina. What's the nafkamina about whether they only lie about these three things? If he can then be identified as someone who can say something is his, just through knowledge and not through a siman, if we know he doesn't lie about these three things, we give it back. If he lies about other things, then we do not return it to him. Over here, the Balei Tosafot already asked it, the Rishonim already asked, that we know there's one other place where a Talmud Chacham is allowed to lie, is mipnei shalom, is for peace, to keep the peace. It's not just the Talmud Chacham, but anybody. But here we know that the Talmud Chacham can lie to keep the peace, to for shalom. So how come that's not in the list of three over here? So the Balei Tosafot answer in this way, that all three of these things are mipnei shalom. These are just subcategories of pnei shalom. That's a more generic statement. These are subcategories of pnei shalom. Others suggest that mipnei shalom is a mitzvah. So in the case of a mitzvah, that's clear that you can lie for a mitzvah there because of mipnei shalom, meaning there you're obligated to lie to keep the peace. Over here, these aren't issues of mitzvah, and therefore the Gemara has to identify you're allowed to lie in these cases, even though they're not issues of mitzvah, just issues of midot. Okay, we're going to stop here, five lines down on the top of Chof Daled Amud Aleph.